I keep going to the store and looking for super, super blonde hair dye and cannot find it. I know it's tough to find a lot of things out there, but after playing Final Fantasy VII Remake, all I want to do is embody my best good pal, Cloud Strife, and that starts
God,
with
you guys
this.
Have you guys have so much damn stuff in common, Russ.
No.
Thank you. Finally somebody's saying
it. My origin story, it's like back to front the same thing.
Yeah, he fell in Mako and turned into a super soldier, and he has bad flashbacks about a long-haired demon man who wants to kill him, and you eat the same bagel sandwich for breakfast every morning and have for like 15 years. It's like the same guy.
It should be noted, this game does not cover all of Final Fantasy VII. I'm sure in part two they will go into the fact that he can't digest milk. It hasn't happened yet, but I think it will.
People can't see this, but there's some strange liquid in Fresh's hair right now, and it appears that the skin is peeling off of his forehead. There's a bottle behind him that just says bleach.
Yeah. We're worried.
That's not the bleach anime. I don't want to get confused. It's a very anime episode. Russ, did you... where are you at vis-a-vis a sword, a blade, a buster sword?
What do I use?
Yeah. What are you using for a buster sword? I'm worried about sort of your...
Frame?
Your brain and your bones just sort of holding up the sword that big.
Right, so weight is a bit of an issue, I will admit. I tried foam. That was a little too much. I don't know if there's some sort of like balloon-type material that I could use as sort of a replacement. But right now, it's been a struggle.
I just had a realization about myself is that I would pay $5,000 to see Russ Freshtick in Cloud Strife cosplay. And that's something I'm discovering now, right in live here as we record. That's weird.
Challenge accepted.
And I hear you've been referring to your allergy medication as your materia. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. It's I only use green and red allergy medicine. It's very important. Right. It combos nicely.
You can cast Claritin too.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of like 100 years ago.
Boy, it feels like you've been saying that a lot recently.
Oofa doofa, hey.
This is
high times. High times.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Chris Plant, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Russ Freshick, and I know the best game of the Moogles.
Oh, interesting. Welcome to the Besties, where we explore the latest and greatest in electronic entertainment. It's a book club about video games. It's a game of the year show that goes all year long. And today we are taking a step forward into the future, but also several steps backward into the past with Final Fantasy Remake Part 1.
We're also taking us a few like sidesteps into a carnival house of mirrors, a sort of sensation of sights and sounds that is unlike anything I've ever experienced while holding a video game controller in my life. I want to challenge us each in a row to explain what the fuck Final Fantasy VII Remake is, because it's not what it says on the tin. I do not think you can safely say, well, they went ahead and remade Final Fantasy VII, the hit role-playing game from 1997. I think it's what they have done is something kind of else with it.
I mean, you do a lot of the same stuff, and there's a lot of the same people, right?
I don't know. Okay. Maybe we should just get into it.
Let's get into it. Let's get into it.
I mean, this is about as into it as you get. It's a remake of Final Fantasy VII, a PlayStation game that was, I think, real quick about Final Fantasy VII. Obviously, seminal, landmark, huge moment for the PlayStation itself. I have a very clear memory of walking past a KB Toys, not owning a PlayStation, walking past a KB Toys, seeing the sign for Final Fantasy VII coming to PlayStation, and knowing that I had to obtain a PlayStation. I mean, that was a pretty, we knew, we're going to have to get one now because the new Final Fantasy is coming out on it. It was
massive.
Was that
because you had an affinity for Final Fantasy?
Oh, yeah. Okay. We, yeah, it was a big, big deal. Griffin learned to read from Final Fantasy games. I mean, that was, it was a big deal in our house. So like,
yeah, we would take turns essentially playing them. Like whenever we got them, we would who here hasn't finished Final Fantasy III yet? And we would just bang them out. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was a big deal for us when this came out, and I think it was a massive get for PlayStation. Obviously, like the scope of this. I mean, first Final Fantasy with like Redbook audio and as drawn out cutscenes as these are. Drawn out is slightly pejorative.
What did you
know
say?
What I
Redbook
mean?
Audio.
Like instruments, like real. Real,
oh,
real,
like an orchestra.
Real, yeah.
I didn't know that was the term for it.
You know what? It's funny. I only heard it in conjunction with Metal Gear Solid. I remember that being the first place that I heard the term. It was like a very, it was a compression format for that CDs use, right? So it was like, Anyway, so Final Fantasy VII Remake. Obviously, this game is like Final Fantasy VII is a landmark that has been still part of the zeitgeist in some sense. 23 years after its release. And Final Fantasy Remake is a... Yeah, see, it is hard. It's a remake in the sense that we don't often get... It's not a remaster, which we have a lot of. It's a remake in the sense that the basic beats of this game are adapted. It almost feels like, you know what? That is probably the best way I can think of it. Is like it almost feels like an adaptation of Final Fantasy VII on modern technology.
Like if Denis Villeneuve went in and tried to make it. Did I get that pronunciation right? No, I did not.
Who knows? Probably not.
No way of knowing.
It reminds me of superhero reboots. Mm-hmm. I think Marvel does this and has done this for a very long time, where you have something like Spider-Man with the core idea of like, here's Peter Parker, and Mary Jane is the person he's in a relationship, and he fights these very specific villains, and it usually happens in this order. But it looks different when they reboot it. It feels more of whatever era it was released in, while also weirdly kind of commenting on the previous era that it was like most popular in, which sounds weird. I'm going to try to unpack that a little with Final Fantasy VII Remake. What's wild to me about this game is... doesn't feel like Final Fantasy VII, but it feels like a game from when Final Fantasy VII was released. So you walk around these big dungeons, and the hallways are very, like, they're effectively just a series of rectangles that you move through, and you find, you know, loot chests that you open, and you have boss encounters. It doesn't feel like a big open-world modern game,
no,
really, at any point. But again, like it doesn't feel specifically like Final Fantasy VII. It feels like something of that generation. It looks absolutely amazing. Like it's one of the most impressive game like visuals of this console generation, I think.
Well,
sometimes
in the Sector 7 slums. And a fucking door just turns into one big brown polygon and every human being disappears suddenly. And you're like, what the fuck's going on?
Doors, especially, there's a fight that I just had where you go through the door and the texture on the door truly looks like it was from a PlayStation 1 game.
It looks wild, yeah.
And
that's
then the rest of the time it's gorgeous.
That's a throwback.
That's
a reference.
It's intentional.
Truly. But yeah, I that's what it reminds me of. It feels like I have not finished the game, but I don't trust the story. And by that, I mean, like, I don't know if I feel like this game is going to be super loyal to Final Fantasy VII. Everything about this feels like it is barreling towards making choices.
Can I stop you for a second? How important to you, well, I should say in general, how important is it that it be loyal to Final Fantasy VII for you?
Zero.
Okay.
Because I played Sega Saturn, and I love Nights and Dreams.
All right.
So my relationship with Final Fantasy VII is memes.
So why don't you trust?
Why don't I trust it?
Yeah.
Because I don't know a way of like saying this other than like it feels like it's setting up. I obviously don't have like a strong connection with Final Fantasy VII, the original, but the characters have a level of depth that I don't think that the game will be as quick to get rid of them as I know the original did. I know, having not played all of the original, the basic story beats, I know which characters die.
Right.
And I don't think there's a way in hell this game, to be clear for people who don't know all this, this game is spread out across many, many games, and the chunk that Final Fantasy VII Remake that's available now only covers, like, what, maybe like a sixth of the original Final Fantasy VII?
I think we're a little bit in the weeds right now.
Okay.
I think we should explain.
Can we talk about the setup,
right? Because I think that the conversation has only been mired in what Chris was getting into of like how much of the game is there, how much of that, because this is the Midgar section of Final Fantasy VII, which is I think like the first disc or even the first half of the first disc of four discs in three or four discs in Final Fantasy VII,
yeah,
the original. It is the first 5 or 6 hours of Final Fantasy VII spread out over a 30 to 40 to 50 hour modern remake game, right? And it was really hard for me to click with this game, despite the fact that like the combat is completely different. It has the materia system in it, which is kind of similar to how materia worked in Final Fantasy VII, where you got all your abilities and spells are slotted into these little gems that you could put into your items and whatever to like build different loadouts for your character. That system was so ahead of its time and kicked ass and still kicks ass today. The real-time combat feels really good, I think, and there's a lot of like strategy to doing turn-based combat stuff. Like all that was great, and like Chris said, like it looks amazing. Like they bring Midgar to life in like a really jaw-dropping way that really just makes you feel this sense of place. But it was really hard for me to not feel like if this isn't even the whole game, then does it make sense for me to even play it? Should I wait until like the whole game is out? But after spending, I'm about 10, 11 hours into it, and it is already pretty apparent that they are, like Chris said, making some choices,
yeah,
where it is so not a retelling of the Final Fantasy VII story. There are certainly the beats and the characters and the setting that it has in it, but they are for sure doing some other stuff.
Yeah, let me ask. Do we want to sort of give an example? Is there a way to give an example of something that's like, I mean, for people that aren't super familiar, like how differing, like,
let's say
these
this
stories are going to be?
The second chapter, maybe, it involves these invisible ghosts that are everywhere, and they are just running wild, and you encounter them in a very iconic section of Final Fantasy VII where there weren't no ghosts back in the original PlayStation version. And these ghosts are, I would say, like probably the main diverse. I keep calling them ghosts. They may not be that. I haven't figured out what they are, but I'm starting to get some pretty wild hints about what they are. Mm-hmm. They are a thing that was just straight up, this story beat and the things that they are teasing out was not in Final Fantasy VII at all. We are talking about a completely different sort of like fractal of this world that they are emphasizing in a way that if it's going where I think it's going, it's fucking, it's bizarre and wild and cool. There's other stuff that I feel like is a little bit more endemic to Final Fantasy VII. There's Biggs and Jesse and Wedge. These avalanche eco-terrorists with a heart of gold, and you really get to know them a lot more. They really flesh them out more as characters, and they do a great job with that. But that feels more like they are expanding Final Fantasy VII. They are also doing stuff that feels like, oh, y'all are also on some whole nother shit that doesn't make me feel like I'm just getting a slice of this thing that already exists.
Yeah, to get into the thing that Griffin's referencing with with Jesse, Biggs, and Wedge, there's entire side sections that feel like bottle episodes of TV. So a comparison I've seen a few people make on Twitter is like, if Final Fantasy VII Vanilla was a movie, then this is the like Netflix series that you're going to get these episodes. It's like, okay, this episode's dedicated to this character. You're going to really learn what makes them tick. So that if some twist that happened in the original, I think they'll land a lot harder. But again, like,
sure.
I also just, I don't know, the amount they're investing into the characters in this game, it's hard to believe that they don't have bigger plans for them.
It's a weird, I don't know, that feels like a weird criticism, because I fully think they are going to continue. I don't think that they are going to divert from a lot of the key things that made Final Fantasy VII so, like, you know, astonishing when it first came out. I'm curious to hear this, because I've noticed the conversation about characters is kind of important about Final Fantasy VII Remake, because that is the two things that I would say they are really, really focusing on, and your enjoyment of these two things will determine your enjoyment of Final Fantasy VII Remake, because the narrative and pacing is like pretty rough at times, is how you feel about Midgar as a setting and how willing you are to like really, really embed yourself in that setting and really like luxuriate in how much detail is everywhere and how much you enjoy the characters. Because again, they've done way more character work, and I think the characters are great, and it's really smart how they have fleshed these characters out. But I also think that the dialogue at times gets like Kingdom Hearts 3 level clunky in a way that, wow, it turns me off so bad.
Yeah, there's a variety. I think there's a range. So there are certain, I think, dialogue sequences that play off totally fine. You know, I think Cloud and Barrett have like a lot of good back and forth, and then they'll have like a scene, as you said, Griffin, that's like a total clunk fest. I think part of the reason why Final Fantasy VII is so enduring and why people love it is not because of the story, because gun to your head, even though you may be able to name some like major moments, could you explain this like overarching story of Final Fantasy VII in a simple way? No, it's the most convoluted Kojima-esque Mishigas going on. But you remember, hey, I remember Valentine. I personally love, he's not in this game, but Cat Sith, the like giant white guy with the like cat on his back, was awesome. So those are the things that I remember. And I actually think, despite, again, Griffin's mention of a few clunky moments, I think by and large, they do justice to these characters in ways that make me care. Yeah. So I really like that part. I would also add, like, even if the like environment isn't necessarily clicking with you, I think the combat clicked with me like instantly in ways that haven't for any JRPG like in the last 10 years.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So you've got, basically it is a similar to Kingdom Hearts, to reference that again. You are able to attack, do a basic attack at any time, but your other ability, you're filling up a bar that with these attacks and with blocking that lets you do other abilities, and that could be a spell, that could be an attack, or it could be something to like boost your defense, whatever. Like the abilities vary from character to character. So combat is really a lot of times the sense of like managing a lot of different plates spinning at once. You're attacking, you're waiting for your big attack to fill up, and then you're using your big attack to. There's this idea of like staggering enemies, which is basically like reducing their stamina so they faint, for lack of a better term, and you can get huge damage on them. Different things stagger different enemies to different amounts, so you got to kind of keep track of that. And then you have other things that are sort of like on a longer timer, like there's limit breaks and big attacks like that. And you can also, at the same time, give commands to your cohorts. You can switch to them at any time, or you can give like one-off commands to them to help like synchronize your abilities. So they cast something that will stagger the enemy and you leap in with you know, a big attack to do bigger damage.
Yeah, it felt, I remember like doing like that, even that first like boss fight that you you fight this giant robot guy.
The boss fights whip ass in this game.
Yeah, the boss fights are amazing. Cinematic. It reminded me of like Bayonetta level like insanity during the boss fights.
Yeah.
But in that boss fight, you really like there's this give and take that previously it was just like a turn-based thing where you're like, okay, right. I'm going to use Barret to cast the lightning and then Cloud is going to go in and use his special thing. But because this is all happening at real time, you're whipping back and forth between these characters so quickly that it seems like chaos. Like, I'm sure if someone walked in and watched me playing this, it was like I was playing like a made up, like the video game in Hackers that they just like threw up on the projector screen, like a total bullshit game. But for me, it like starts clicking once you like, oh, I'm watching these meters. And normally that turns me off because there's so much going on. But there was something about the combination of it all that like really worked.
I think the two things that are cool about it is, one, it doesn't allow you to hang back and just feel confident because you have enough mana to cast your healing spell X number of times. Because there's a lot of situations where like, man, I love to heal everybody. I don't have any energy basically in my bar. I got to go like kick some ass to refill that, hopefully in time to get a cure off to try to save this thing. The other thing that I think is cool that I didn't expect was like the first few times I have done almost any of the big encounters, I get my ass handed to me. Yeah. And I have to take a step and be like, okay, wait a minute. I need to reevaluate the order of operations here because I'm doing something wrong. And there is a way through. You just have to like really like this is you know, in a lot of RPGs, you get that ability or piece of material or whatever that's like, scan the enemy for weaknesses. It's like, fucking bullshit. I'll sell that first opportunity I get. I got a weakness, swords. In this game, like, I'm like, hold on, everyone, let me assess his weaknesses because I have to, or else they will kill me. Because the enemies aren't just, like, there's a lot that have, like, certain specific techniques that, there's one, I just did one fight where there were these three enemies that, before you could do physical damage to them, you had to hit them with some spells. So it was this constant taking turns of like, okay, I cast a spell on this guy, so somebody else has to get in and get a few attacks, and then I'll re-up my spells once he becomes immune again to physical attacks. And that's just like a regular enemy that has that level of depth to the encounter. I will say this is a little frustrating. I wish I had a little bit more macro control over how the companions behave when I'm not in control of them. It very much wants you to plant, and I talked about this a little bit. It very much wants you to be jumping back and forth between the two. Mm-hmm. Unlike, say, something like Mass Effect, where you can kind of set it and forget it a little bit.
Sure.
You really do need to like jump in and help those companion characters, or a lot of times they're not going to fill up the bar as fast as you need them to, or whatever else.
Yeah. How do you all feel about Cloud as a character in this game?
It's so interesting, right? Final Fantasy VII in play, up till I would say Final Fantasy IX had a very likable protagonist. Final Fantasy VIII had Squall Leonhardt, who sucked. Final Fantasy VII, you had Cloud, who was a big edgelord all the way through the first act of the game until he meets Aerith. Man, she's called Aerith in this one, but like she was called Aeris in the stateside release of Final Fantasy VII, and it's been this huge divide that now has, it seems like, come together. Meets Aerith in the church, and then finally starts to like let that facade drop a little bit. In this game, like, you start to see that, like, they try to make Cloud relatable pretty much after the first chapter. Like, they try to, they do a lot to make his constant flashbacks be less sort of soap opera-y and a lot easier to kind of follow what he has been through and what's been going on. But also, like, you get more interactions with him and Jesse and Wedge and Biggs that there's one whole chapter where they go to Jesse's, maybe I shouldn't spoil it, but it's the most, like, that is where it hit peak, like, Hideo Kojima, like, why are they talking about pizza so much? Wow, they're talking about pizza a lot. But like, he starts to relate with these characters and starts to kind of like them, become like defensive of them. And that kind of like subverts Final Fantasy VII's whole thing, which is like, this guy is a miserable bastard mercenary who's just in it for the money. And now he's like kind of, he's, you know, taking pot shots at other people from time to time and like cracking jokes every, he's still like a hard ass, but he's, you know, definitely lighter than he is in Final Fantasy VII. So I'm like, I am enjoying him. I'm enjoying the direction that they are taking him compared to the original.
Yeah, I didn't expect this to be the generation in which Final Fantasy games become almost exclusively a critique of masculinity, specifically toxic masculinity. But you look at Final Fantasy XV and it was very similar. I mean, that game rules, and it's also about a boy band that drives around in a cool car and like killing enemies and fishing together and camping and snuggling and being best friends who love each other. And then this game, I the one time I actually tried Final Fantasy VII a few years ago, I bounced off because I just hated Cloud as a character. And here, he is so likable so quickly and like sad. The flashbacks are so sparing and unclear that it reads more like trauma than, like you said, soap opera.
That's, well, that is what they tried to accomplish. He has a traumatic backstory, and Final Fantasy VII, whether it's by virtue of the writing or the pacing or just the graphics back then, like, didn't really land super well.
And then there's this famous scene from the game, the honeybee inn scene, where he cross dresses, and in the original one it was not delicate. In this version, it's like warm and nice.
Okay, let's not hand out a lot of medals. There's still some stuff in this game that I was pretty embarrassed for my wife. My wife walked in when Tifa dressed some sort of like very specific, like this is a specific fetish that she's dressing for her husband. Very specific, is asking me what kind of clothes should she wear, something exotic or something. And I'm like, my wife's like, what are you playing? And it's like, this is a really old game, like that came out a week ago. But gosh. And the wild sexualization. Aerith runs like an absolute idiot. It's like a bizarre.
Nobody runs good in this game. Nobody runs good,
but Aerith looks like whoever designed it had seen a woman once in a magazine and tried to reverse engineer via bone structure how their form might operate. It is wild.
Were you unnerved by whenever you talk to women in this game, the camera stops being a two shot and just goes to Cloud's POV and the character looking directly in your eyes? Which is
just barreling.
It's really awkward.
Talking about walking animations reminded me of probably my biggest problem with the game, and I love it, and I also have a hard time playing it for long sessions because it exhausts me. Because I think the pacing is so bad. There is, I believe it's chapter 3, you get to Sector 7 slums, which is where, I mean, it is an iconic, I think settling this game in Midgar makes a lot of sense because it is the most iconic part of Final Fantasy 7 in my mind, outside of like Costa del Sol, which is still such a memorable thing. And Sector 7 slums is so iconic. You get 7th Heaven, the bar that Tifa owns, and just this like dope aesthetic that they really do nail. Being able to look, the skyboxes in this game are out of control. Mm-hmm. Looking up and seeing the artificial sun lamps that are like these mile wide things hanging over the city, and like playing at some points in Sector 7 and the light is all bright and artificial and cloying, and then sometimes you get like that golden hour sun shining between the plates. Like the detail that they've put in here kicks ass. But the, like I said, the doors are like a little snippet of what I think is like a pretty glaring problem of just like, it feels like they have 5 pounds of game in the most beautiful 50-pound bag like ever created. And Chapter 3 for me is like the biggest example of that, where you have all these side quests which involve you going to like the same 3 places 3 times over and getting 500 gil here and some high potions there. And then there was one scene where like these ruffians show up to rough up Barret. They're like looking for Barret, and they're like, follow me. And you follow this group of ruffians to this back alley, and you're like, oh, I'm going to have to fight these ruffians. And it never comes up. It has not come up again. Maybe I'm missing something, but I'm 11 hours in. I've never seen hide nor hair of those dudes again. But walking behind them, it's like 5 dudes, and they all have the same walking animation in perfect lockstep. Just like, and it's not good. And they like walk upstairs in that like sort of video gamey, just like hopping up it all in lock. And it's like seeing that, like, y'all put so much work into this world and made it so realistic and so amazing, and I want to be in it. But then I see some shit like this, and it's like, why did somebody had to play this and say, like, hey, it's really weird how they all walk like automaton puppets all attached by strings, like in the NSYNC Bye 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 music video. Like, what's going on?
That needs to happen.
Fresh, you have something?
Yeah, no, I mean, I just find it very interesting that, like, because I bounce off JRPGs so quickly, it just kind of amazes me that more games don't follow the way that this game starts. You talk about Final Fantasy 15, which is, if people recall, the one with the people, with the boys in the car, and they drive around. And that game starts with like a insanely complicated action-y cutscene with spaceships flying and shit like that. And then the game actually starts, and you're in the desert, and you're just driving around. And I was on a stream, and I fell asleep. It's the only time it's ever happened. I fell asleep playing this game. And I feel like most JRPGs follow that same model. Like, you know, you're a small boy in a small village, and hey, it's your birthday today, so I guess you're gonna challenge the birthday gods and march up the mountain and complete this one challenge.
You hate Zelda now? You hate Zelda? You're done with Zelda?
I'm talking about JRPGs now, Chris. But this game starts with like a fucking action-packed 30 to 40 minute like heist sequence that like does not happen a lot anymore, and I don't understand why. It's like, in the same way we were talking about Resident Evil last week, where like, why did Resident Evil 4 hit? Why did Resident Evil 2, the remake, hit? Is because it matched this balance that like drew people into the game in an interesting way. And then they sort of forget, hey, this was something that worked. Maybe we should just go back to like a really slow, like exposition heavy thing.
It feels weird to call this a JRPG, because when you do that and and it's called Final Fantasy, I think you assume a certain thing. I think this is framed by the fact that I'm still playing Persona 5 Royal, which is a JRPG to the fucking max. And I'm not having a problem playing these two simultaneously, because Final Fantasy VII Remake really does feel like a cinematic character action game. Like, I think you could make the argument that it is, somebody mentioned Bayonetta, like, you can make the argument that it is maybe closer in its DNA to something along the character action line than it is an RPG, because it is chapter based, it is fairly linear, it is it really focused on characters and story. Like,
Justin, are you okay?
I think it's that.
No, I don't think it's like Bayonetta, though. I mean, it's like you press, there's the one button with a sword that does a sword hit. And if you hold it, it does a longer sword hit. You are talking about wild stuff where it's like, it's kind of like Bayonetta. I don't know. There's a, I don't know. Yeah, I don't think it's like that. That seems
it's
a,
not a combo
based
game.
It's more like Diner Dash if you want to get into it.
How is it like Diner Dash, Justin?
Because you have meters that are filling up, and you've got to keep one thing going, and then you got to switch back to the other. Barrett's, you know, making hamburgers / recharging his lightning powers. You know, same basic principle. Can I want to just ask like one big question before we like close out. It's just like, we've talked a lot about what it is, but why is it?
Why does it
and I don't
exist?
Mean that confrontationally. I mean, like, what I'm having, like, I don't feel like we answered the initial question. Like, what is the, because for me, the cool thing about remakes in a large part is that like they allow a new audience into a thing by updating how it looks. So you're not put off by that and looks and sounds and like tweak some of the like smaller issues, but keeping the bones there. This is really like an overhaul in a sense that we don't see in video games pretty much ever. Like, what do you all think the goal of this really is? And do you feel like it achieved that goal from what you've seen so far?
Yeah, I think we're seeing like a really weird moment for video games, in that a lot of the people who were directors when we were kids are now like running studios, right? And then people who are inspired by them who are extremely creative now have director positions. So we're entering, God, please forgive me. And I know, Freshik, I can already feel your eyes rolling when I say this. I think we're entering this weird postmodern part of video games, where video games double as both the game itself and a critique of the game or the medium or whatever its influences were. And I think we saw that with, forgive me again, Nier Automata, which is really just a critique of video game history. I think Final Fantasy VII Remake largely is a critique of the Final Fantasy series. It is really going hard at riffing on characters both from Final Fantasy VII and ideas from all of the games. I think we've seen it with other things. I think Bioshock Infinite is just a re-exploration of Bioshock. It's a really weird moment where we're getting to see games actually be about games. And like, this is normal. Like, that sounds heady, but film has done this forever. Like, we see this in, Jerry Bruckheimer does stuff like this. Like, Transformers plays with these ideas. But it's kind of new in games. And I think that's what, from a purely artistic point of view, like, what do I like about it? Because the answer why is it'll make more money. Like, that's the answer of why Square Enix made this. But why did these directors get excited about it? I think they got excited about it because they realized we can take something that is one of the most influential works of art in this medium, like, straight up, and we can unpack it, we can morph it, we can play with it, we can find out what makes it exciting, we can do it better. Like, I think that there is a certain hubris to it, and that shit is wild. And like, that is, I think that is like at my core why when I'm playing this game, I feel like energetic, because it is so cool to play with a game.
I want everyone to play it. Everyone should play it. Like, I wouldn't even say I'm enjoying half of it, but everyone should play it because I've never played anything. I've never played a game that has attempted to do what this game is doing. And I think that that's like Plant said, like, that is cool and exciting.
There's one other thing that I want to hit on because it's something that we talked about last week and I'd like to get your opinions on it. Last week we talked about playing Resident Evil 3, like, in this moment, right? Like, in a time of pandemic and in a time of, I think, just like global stress, right? And I was really worried going into this game about playing a game that was set in an apocalypse or dystopia, basically, with everything going on. And I thought it would really bum me out. And it hasn't at all. It's actually like made me feel really good. And I've been trying to figure out why that is. And the best guess that I have is I feel like most dystopian stories are, hey, we don't have blank, but we have each other. Right? Like, we don't have money, or we don't have like basic society, or we don't have a place to live. But at the end of the day, like, we have each other. So no matter how bad the world gets, like, things are good. And what's so weird is the crisis that we're living in right now is basically the one crisis that is allergic to that solution. Like, it's the one scenario in which, like, it's gorgeous outside right now. But the one thing we don't have is each other. And I think that's why this is clicking for me in a way that Resident Evil didn't. Resident Evil is not about having other people. It's basically just about, like, survival. Even go into a dystopian world, but spend time with all of these lovable characters, it feels like such a huge relief. And
Animal Crossing is doing the same thing, yeah. No, I completely agree. I think it makes a huge difference. And why, you know, to go back to what I said earlier, why this game is so memorable is because of the characters like the original FF7 and being able to spend time with them in ways that, like, previously they were just, like, you know, weird polygonal, like, shapes and then just text written on a screen, to have them, like, the whole thing fully voiced and just these much more fleshed out, well-rounded things. Is
the crowd barks are a little assertive from time to time, I would say. Running down a single hallway to, like, pick up an item and then running back and hearing the same guy go, "Look at that big sword! I gotta get me a sword like that. Look at that big sword! I gotta get me a sword like that." It's a little much.
I mean, he wants that sword.
He wants the big sword.
Listen, this has been great. We gotta move on. We're gonna take a quick break. The huge sword still looks stupid. And moving on, I'm sorry, it looks ridiculous. It's idiotic. He should be falling over backwards every time he takes a step. And now a quick break. Honorable mentions. Is anybody else playing anything that they would like to discuss?
I know I just told you that I was going to talk more about Persona 5 Royal, but I changed my mind. It's great. I'm really enjoying it a lot, actually, the more I play it. I do want to talk about a little game for Xbox One Kinect called Rabbids Invasion, the interactive TV show. Been playing that with my boy Henry, who's 3, and who I've not been able to, like, really get into a video game. Like, he will watch me play Pokemon sometimes, but that's about the extent of it, because he's, like, he doesn't understand how to use a controller still, but Rabbids Invasion, the interactive TV show, is a cartoon with the rabbits in it, and sometimes a little picture will appear of an item, like a traffic cone, and then whenever that traffic cone appears in the cartoon, you have to point at it, and whoever points at it first gets points. And that's, like, it's, like, such base-level interactions that, like, little kids can understand, that it is the first time that, like, we are really clicking, like... Fruit Ninja 2, also on Kinect, is really becoming a hot item in our house. It is the first time that the dream of Kinect has been realized, and I am, like,
and, you know, there's no telling what the future holds for Kinect.
It's so funny. After Griffin did his plug for this game that I never heard of, I bought it, and then I got my daughter downstairs, booted it up, and it's like, point at this. I'm like, huh? I had explained to my daughter that Daddy's box was too leaked to accept a Kinect camera. Daddy's box was too rugged to be able to take. It's too good to be able to take a busted down Kinect camera. And plus, she said, "I know you have one." It's like, "I do, baby, but Daddy's box is too rugged, too cool to take this old ass camera." So sadly, we have not yet played it. She is still heartbroken. But what we did play is my honorable mention, which is not what I said it was going to be. It is instead the Putt-Putt franchise, available on Steam. That's right. Humongous Entertainment and Broderbund present Putt-Putt. And the whole series is on Steam. These games were made in 1995. Okay. They're on the Scum engine. They are adventure games for kids. And honestly, you're laughing, but as a parent who's been looking for something anything to distract my child for a moment. She has now, and this has never happened before, she has now played through Putt-Putt, joins the parade, Putt-Putt saves the zoo.
Wait, are these golf games?
No, it's a car. Putt-Putt's a little car.
Oh.
And they're basic, I mean, they're very basic adventure games for kids. And it's like basic get the item, take the item to the person who needs it kind of stuff.
There.
Fully voiced. They were originally on CD, but the downloads are, you know, minuscule. All the games cost like $6.
Red.
But they actually vary. Most of the games vary a little
Red
bit.
Red Book Audio?
Between Red Book Audio, cool, indeed, cool, cool, my friend. I'm glad to say you know the terms going in. That's excellent. But the actual mechanics, like the solutions can differ different times, or like the challenges that you have to do can differ on each playthrough. And it takes like an hour to play through each one. They're really cool. I was so happy to find them again because I remember, I had such fond memories. I mean, I was a little old for them when they first came out, but I was hoping that, you know, Charlie would get into them, and she really, really has. So they're just called Putt-Putt. They're on Steam. Check them out.
I wanted to mention Good Job, which is on Switch. It is a game that is like a physics-based puzzle game, essentially, using the graphics kind of look like stick figures that you'd see in like a How to Save Someone from Choking poster. And the idea is you have simple objectives like, hey, bring this projector from this room into another room. But because the physics are so like outrageous and like bonkers, you'll end up like knocking over desks and like knocking things through walls and stuff like that. So it's this interesting balance of like, do I want to be super careful or do I want to like rush through this thing as quickly as possible? The game actually encourages you to rush, even though that creates like a comical amount of chaos. I found it like really easy just to like pick up. There's drop in, drop out, 2-player co-op locally. Kind of in the spirit of trying to remember, like Gang Beasts, like those like goofy physics games.
Kind of Untitled Goose Game, I would say, in that the chaos is part of the point.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Chaos is definitely part of the point, and it's better that you kind of lean into it. I really liked it. It was great.
If you have Game Pass, really quick, a new game just got added to Game Pass, so you can play it for free if you're a subscriber. It's called Nier Automata. Game of the Yorha edition, okay. And I encourage you to give it a try.
I don't know if it's audible when I hit my head against the mic, but
yeah,
that's what I was doing.
We are running long, but do we have any salient like feedback from the audience about this remade Final Fantasy
game? I have one tweet that I want to share. I know we're running long. This is from Jess. As someone who is a diehard Cloud fan, I really appreciate how much I disliked him to start off with. This is about the remake. His personality and flaws are so much more fleshed out than it could be in the original, and I love seeing him slowly soften as he builds relationships with the other characters. Jess also notes, also the honeybee end sequence made me happier than anything I've experienced so far in a video game, so there's that. Which is,
wow, damn.
It's good.
I think I'm just about to the wall market. Am I almost there?
Yeah, you're probably about like 5 hours out.
Oh, Jesus.
So many hours. Longtime listener from John Lynch writes to us for the first time. Says, Final Fantasy VII was a life-defining game for me. I got it with a PlayStation on Christmas morning in 97, but was immediately informed the family was eating out for Christmas lunch, so I couldn't play it until I returned. I was so desperate to experience it that I snuck the game manual out with me and secretly read it from cover to cover about 10 times under the tablecloth instead of eating or interacting with anyone. Best Christmas lunch ever.
Oh, good. So there's finally somebody that understands the overall plot. That's what it required.
That just took me on a like trip. I feel like I was always up to shit like that.
Yeah.
Like, man.
I miss that. I used to love the drive back from the mall, and I would just like be reading a manual back in those. Yeah. See, kids, manuals were.
I'm telling you.
They used to be printed out, and they would have a place that you'd dip it in water to reveal a code. Star Trek was only. That's the show. Right, next week we're doing something a little bit different, and because there's no games, we got so excited about games, and then games left the room. But we're going to be doing something different and exciting and fun. If you want to be the first to hear about it, follow us on Twitter at the Besties Pod. And I guess probably join our mailing list.
Yeah, you can subscribe to the mailing list. It's the pinned tweet on our Twitter feed.
And you can also, as you have probably discovered at this point, follow and listen for free on Spotify, please take a moment to share the show with a friend. Besties.fan is the web address you can use to share the show. You can also send us an email if you want, mail@besties.fan. I hope you are ready for in as much the spirit of the Besties, if you're just not joining us, a bit of a shakeup format wise. We've not done this before. No, this is our like seventh one, but I think it's going to be a little contentious, and we're going to have some interactive fun.
I'm hyped for it. So, it's going to be good.
It's going to be really good. So join us for that and so much more next week on the Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
The Besties is a Spotify original podcast in association with Vox Media. The show is edited by Jelani Carter. And our theme song is by Ian Dorsch.
Besties!